Hello, welcome back to a new episode of For the Love of Weather. This is the podcast where we explore the Earth's atmosphere and how we are all connected through the weather and climate. We are your hosts, Gemma and Aisling. We're both meteorologists and weather presenters and have been working in weather now for over 15 years. We are so happy to have you here on the podcast with us today. And as always, we hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more and learn a little something about how the weather and climate can impact our daily lives. Hi, I'm Gemma.
And hi, I'm Aisling. And today we actually have quite a special guest and a common friend as well, which is so lovely. It's Ben Rich. He works for the BBC. He's on the National Hello. Weather Team, the Global Weather Team as well. You're also a journalist and you also just happen to be a meteorologist as well. So quite a unique little combination because you've done Met Office training, which, as you will know, is full on. And then you're also a journalist as well. So it's that lovely combination of communication and storytelling. And I think actually I might have met you about 10 years ago now. That's a bit scary.
Well, it's funny you mentioned in the intro 15 years, because I was thinking about this, knowing we were going to record this tonight. And it is 15 years, in fact, just over 15 years that I started working in weather now as well, which probably explains all the grey hairs in the beard, sort of suddenly, shockingly become quite a long time for all of us, it turns out.
So in those cumulative years, we've actually all done something very different, but just shared that lovely commonality of actually just really wanting to have a chat with the weather. And absolutely. Thankfully, and we managed to get paid for it. So Ben, we start asking this with all of our guests, and I think actually it's a beautiful question. Where was the first spark of joy? You either thought to yourself, you know, I'd really like to tell people about the weather, or I just want to know what's going on.
Well, so I can trace it back to when I was 5 years old, which is quite a long time ago now. And I grew up in rural Devon, just on the edge of Dartmoor, and the weather down there just kind of changes every 5 minutes, it would seem. And I don't know, I don't remember a time when I wasn't fascinated by weather. So sometimes we would go for a walk on Dartmoor and it would be lovely clear skies, and then suddenly the fog would come and you wouldn't know the way back to the car. Or there was the frustrating thing that would happen where it would snow and you'd think, yay, snow day, off school. And then because of where you are in the southwest of England, the snow just melts and you're kind of back to school with big puddles. And so I don't know, I was always fascinated by the weather. And then when I was about 5 years old, or even younger than that, actually, my mum every day would watch the 1 o'clock news on the BBC, which obviously always ends with the weather. And then after that, we would watch Neighbours. And that was kind of our routine from when I was a little baby. And I always, my mum tells me this more than I remember it, I always was just obsessed with the weather forecast. I loved maps, always loved maps, loved looking at the map. I just found the weather forecast sort of mystifying. And so that connection between the weather I was seeing around me and then that kind of job that I saw someone doing, I knew from about that age that it was the job I wanted to do, I think.
You know, you're one of the lucky ones in life, I think. Well, I didn't quite know actually what I want, as in I knew what I loved, but I didn't really know the name for it. And it's lovely that you know,
well, but
has come full circle. Like, so what you thought about when you were a kid has happened.
Oh, well, yeah, but you're absolutely right. I mean, I feel very lucky. If ever I'm having a sort of, you know, bad day at work or a difficult day at work, it's quite helpful to think, well, that was what I always wanted to do. And, you know, to sort of remind yourself of how lucky you've been, I guess, to have that opportunity to do what you always wanted to do. But obviously, you know, when you're 5, 6, 7, 8 years old and you're saying to your parents, I want to do that job on the telly, like Michael Fish, you know my mum quite rightly said to me, you might want to think about, you know, maybe you could be a lawyer, or maybe you could be a, I don't know, anything else. I think, you know, she was trying to keep my sort of feet on the ground, I guess, with how likely it was that would come to pass. So I guess I do feel quite lucky that's the way it's gone. And we might talk about this, but it wasn't necessarily a straightforward pathway either. You mentioned journalism at the start, and that actually was, I did that before I did weather, so I kind of got into it by a route that maybe isn't quite as traditional as some other people did.
I think I always found that when I was talking to people, that everyone's journeys was very different, and that's what I loved. Like, I love listen to people's stories. I think that's why I love doing this podcast so much. So what was your journey? How did you move from the journalism into the presenting?
You're so right, Gemma. And it's funny because whenever people write to me or people send me messages on Twitter or whatever, and they ask, how do I become a weather forecaster presenter? And there's no sort of there's no one answer to that. I think there used to be. It used to be that you would train at the Met Office, and then you would get picked to do some broadcasting, and then that is the way into it. And all three of us know that that is not now the only way into it. For me, so I've told you that I always wanted to do it from when I was really young, and then I kind of had a plan, which was to study meteorology at university, and that this plan all sort of felt like it was coming together. And then suddenly I hit A level maths and I could not do it. My brain just kind of shut down, and I did not know head nor tail of A level maths. And so my teacher gave me loads of extra lessons. Thank you, Mrs. Benzie, if you're listening to this. I managed to get me like an AS level in maths, applied maths actually. So I only did one unit of what they call pure maths, so the proper maths. And then I did a bit of mechanics and a bit of statistics and just dragged myself over the line. But basically, it became clear that a meteorology degree probably wasn't the right thing for me, and probably wasn't possible either because I just didn't have that A level. So I had to then come up with a new plan. And I firmly believe that this is what life is all about. You make a plan, it doesn't quite work out. You make a new plan. And I went to study geography at the University of Southampton. And then after that, I did a master's in broadcast journalism at Falmouth University. So down in Cornwall, which was a lovely, lovely space place to spend a year. And then from there, I was very lucky to get a job in local radio, commercial local radio, reading the news, reporting, presenting. It was such good experience because there were only three of us on our news team. We had to cover all these different bulletins for three different radio stations. So you're really just thrown straight in. And when you've got to present a half-hour news program and you haven't even finished writing the script yet, that is adrenaline. And it was such great experience because then when I went on to another job in at a bigger radio station, you have that experience under your belt, you have a bit more confidence. And then the BBC were looking for people to present the weather on regional TV and local radio. And they needed new people in every region. And so I applied for all the jobs, every single one. So Belfast, Tunbridge Wells, Glasgow, everywhere in between, every single job I applied for it. And most of them, they wrote back to this. I think I was 20, 23 when I was applying for all these jobs. And they wrote back to this essentially kid, I guess, and went, nah. No. And then for some reason, BBC Birmingham, so in the Midlands, they gave me an interview and a screen test, and they gave me the job. And so I don't fully know why, but they gave me the job because of that. I mean, you guys all know that when you start, you're very unpolished, let's say politely. And I was certainly not polished, and I've got recordings of my first TV broadcasts, and they were not good. But it was a foot in the door. I was doing a lot of radio. I was doing a little bit of TV. They really sort of showed me how to do TV. They taught me everything about it. I was very fortunate to have opportunities to do outside broadcasts, and got to present some of the news programs as well. Got to do some reporting. So it was a really kind of great 4 years I spent there at Midlands Today in Birmingham. And then I just thought, well, I'm having a great time doing all these different things, but what do I really want to do? And it came back to that thing from the very beginning, that what I really wanted to do was weather. So this is a very long story. I left the BBC. I joined the Met Office. I did the initial forecasting course. So, trained as a meteorologist, sort of like went back to university. It felt like the most crazy 6 months of, back in a classroom after after having a job for several years, it was, and you're learning equations and all the math stuff that I didn't really know how to do, but it was all sort of flying at me. But it was such a great immersive experience. You just spend 6 months immersed in the weather. I just remember going out very early in the course, just going outside of the Met Office in Exeter and just looking at the clouds, doing the sort of observation unit, and everything just sort of went from there, really. You just immersed in the weather. And then from there, I went to RAF Northolt, where I did some forecasting with RAF pilots, which was fascinating and very hard, and very high pressured. And then all of those different elements, so the journalism, the forecasting, the weather broadcasting already done, all came together. And I ended up back at the BBC doing the job that I do now, on national TV and radio, and as you said at the start, the world TV as well. How long is that? It's far too long, I've spoken, but
Well,
the
you
long
know,
story, the long story.
it's those things though as well, isn't it? It's when somebody, you know, and I get it when you meet somebody and they might have just finished their degree or they're still in the middle of their degree and they think, I want to go and do that thing, you know, that one thing. But most of us have gone and done many things to get to that thing. So we've always had that destination in our mind, but we've taken every opportunity on the way to get there. And there are some people that are really lucky and they, you know, they get something. I don't know. They get something straight away, but I'm guessing, with all that said, you wouldn't actually change any of the experience you picked up. And ultimately, what you have clearly always loved to do is to tell a story, and it turns out to be about science.
Well, you're so right, because that was exactly what I was going to say, actually. I don't regret any part of that journey. In fact, I'm really pleased that I've been on that journey, because I've sort of accumulated skills as I've gone. Telling stories is probably my favorite thing to do, and I've had the opportunity to tell all sorts of different stories, from very sad stories when I was working as a reporter to obviously. You're doing these jobs in local radio, and they're very hard jobs, because you just have to sort of jump from one extreme to the other. You might be reporting on some terrible car crash, and then the next you're interviewing someone from Coronation Street, and you just have to sort of be able to shift from one to the other and tell all those stories as you go. And then to be able to combine that with weather, and this is the thing about weather broadcasting, it is all about storytelling. It is all about a beginning, a middle, and an end. However long that your broadcast is, you might have a minute, you might have 2.5 minutes, 3.5 minutes, we sometimes do at the BBC. And particularly with those longer ones, you really have to come up with a narrative and something that's going to keep people with you. Because 3.5 minutes is a really long time to listen to someone just talking at you, essentially. There's no other bit of TV that I can think of where you are just watching someone talk at you for 3.5 minutes.
And also without a script. I
No,
think a lot of
absolutely.
people don't realize that. None of us use a script. The story is in your head.
No, it's funny when you take people. So, if ever anyone comes to visit, friends and family, etc., comes to visit work, and you show them the studio, they're surprised. So most people know that we do the weather with green screen a lot of the time, but the studio is a lot smaller than they think it's going to be. And then when you tell them that there's no auto cue, they just go, "Well, what? How do you do that?" But the thing is, it doesn't feel difficult now. I mean, I'm not saying the job is easy. There are bits of the job that are hard and challenging, and live TV is extremely, or can be extremely
Hilarious at
challenging.
times.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely hilarious. Oh my word. But you just do it, and I couldn't tell you how. Actually, it just sort of happens. And the thing is, when you start out, so I talked about when I started at Midlands Today, and the first broadcast that you do without a script, and they didn't let me do any live broadcasts for I think about 6 months, and in the end, I'm so thankful, because suddenly when you're live and you've got to do that, and you're in the big studio with the other presenters there, and they throw to you, and it's like, oh my word. But you just have to sort of sink or swim. But equally, sinking isn't really an option. So you sort of just have to swim. And that's kind of the way, it's kind of the way I say to people. If people come to do the weather, I know Gemma, you're doing a bit of presenting now, and you've learned, I think, that sometimes you just have to throw yourself in. You've got time pressure, You've got to just get it done, and so you do it.
So we'll tell you a little secret, Ben. When you were a briefer, it's the same thing.
Well, I know, and it's all, but this is the thing in so many walks of life, when you talk to people about their jobs, and what they do, but it is about looking like you know what you're talking about, when in fact you maybe don't know as much as your
So
appearance.
I will just pause you there though, but I
Yes.
will say I think that we forget as well. Like, and people say, "Oh, how do you know?" Like, we forget the cumulative knowledge and pattern recognition that we all have, and so it can feel like on a day where maybe you feel like you're winging it a little bit, you're not really.
Well,
You
that's
know, you're knowing what to let
amazing.
go, and you're knowing what to focus on, and you're knowing ultimately what people want to know.
So on our shifts, we are kind of you. I was thinking about this because obviously I was thinking about the job in from a sort of outsider's point of view, knowing I was going to come and talk to you. And actually, it's a bit weird when you think about it, because we just go into work and look at weather maps literally all day, like. All day. You're either
Timings, weather maps, model data,
exactly
broadcast times,
satellite radar, yeah, broadcast schedules, because you don't want
backward
to
clocks that count down to zero. So
100%,
he's talking.
and people counting down to zero in your ears as well. So yeah, a lot of times, a lot of timing. I just sort of I sit at my desk at work and I catch myself doing this. I'm kind of building my graphics on one screen. Because we make all our own graphics as well. That's another thing that always surprises people. And then on the other screen, I've got my radar or my satellite or all my observations. And then I'm sort of doing a meerkat, because there's a clock that's over the other side of the office. So I'm sort of like popping up above my screen to look at the clock, and it's just like darting eyes between those three screens. And the clock is the one that you must never lose sight of, because broadcasting is obviously. You can be as clever as you want, and you can know the story as well as you can. But if you miss the broadcast, there is literally no point. If you ask most people how long a minute is, I don't. Well, obviously they'd say 60 seconds. But what does that feel like?
Yeah, what's it
I think
feel like? Yeah.
we probably all could tell you what. Well, we could know what that's going to feel like. Yeah, and it's very strange. And then you also sort of get a little bit sort of cavalier with time as well. So you're on air in your broadcast is on in 5 minutes. And you know, when I first started at the weather center doing the national stuff, I would be in the studio 15 minutes before everything, because I was so terrified that something wouldn't work. And now you sort of go, oh, it's 2 minutes until I'm on BBC One. And you know, that's not ideal, but you sort of because you realize that 2 minutes actually can be quite a long time. Or equally not a long time. It's very time is a very strange thing. Time is something I've also always been fascinated in, actually. My mum tells me I could tell the time when I was 2 and a half. It was my sort of childhood party trick. So I think it was always going to be that I did a job where there was some time and some maps and some weather, and that's exactly where I've ended up.
Oh, the perfect job for you, Ben. Do you have any knack for or any tricks for retaining information? Because, like, we both know how much information you have to retain. Like, you'll get a briefing on the weather for the whole world and potentially a briefing on the weather for the UK at the same time. That's a lot of information. Like, how do you remember that and retain it all?
So the thing that's nice, particularly with the world weather, is if you've been on for a few days, you sort of know what's going on in every place, and so you can build up a picture and a story in your head. If you walk in fresh after 2 weeks of holiday, and suddenly you get your briefing, and then you've got to be on air talking about the weather in the east of Asia, and it's like, oh, and then you've also, as you said, got to do the whole world and the UK as well. So I guess, I mean, it's another one of those things where I slightly don't know how I do it, really, and I'm quite useless at remembering things from longer ago. So I sort of feel like I fill my brain with all the stuff I need for that day, and then I go home, and somewhere along the line on the Jubilee line, it empties, and then I go back tomorrow and I fill it with new stuff, but I can't necessarily remember what I was talking about last week, or even yesterday. But I think one thing that helps me is writing things down. And I don't necessarily mean doing nice, neat writing, because I have really not neat writing anyway. But even just the act of scribbling stuff down. So if I'm being briefed, I like to have the maps in front of me, and the forecaster will be briefing me on the story, the weather story, and I'll be scribbling stuff that maybe I can't even read later. But the act of having written it down helps to get it into my brain. I think the other thing that's really important, and this comes with experience, is knowing what you don't need to remember. So filtering out the information that you need. So a weather briefing. One of our forecasters, which is a job both of you guys have done, briefing us, the forecaster might speak for 10 minutes, 15 minutes sometimes. And rightly, they are giving you a full sort of précis of everything that's gone on in the past hours. Everything that is to come, every little nuanced bit of cloud and fog that might turn up in each bit of the UK. And actually, I know that I've only got 2.5 minutes. So there's stuff that I can kind of file under the, well, that's nice to know, but that can go at the back of the brain. And then at the front of the brain, these are the sort of key bullet points. You think of it as bullet points. And then I guess the other thing is because we build the graphics ourselves, I am constantly thinking, what is my story? So I'm choosing the map. So we choose the maps we want to use. So is today a day when the satellite picture will help, or will the radar picture help, or are we going to show some viewers photos, or how long am I going to spend on this afternoon? How long am I going to spend on tonight? And all those things, you're kind of thinking about, well, what do I want to say? What's the story I'm trying to tell? And that really helps me to remember. It's sort of like storyboarding what you want to say. And once I've got that in my head, it's kind of stuck there for the rest of the shift, which is a good thing, especially if the graphics fail, which has only happened to me once, I think. But you go on air and the graphics fail, and you've got to talk for the 2.5 minutes anyway, and that's the point. Or you've got to go on the radio suddenly. Someone rings up and goes, "Oh, can you do us a quick hit for Radio 5 Live or whatever?" Just having those bullet points in your head makes those situations survivable.
As well as general knowledge about match times, match games, seasons, cricket,
Oh yeah,
forecasts.
we do sometimes do weather for a program called Test Match Special, which some of our listeners will know about. If you are that way inclined and you like your cricket. I don't know anything about cricket. Gemma's waving. She loves cricket. Gemma, you love all sport.
Gemma knows more about sport than any human I've
Yes.
ever met.
That is
Well,
not true. I
it is.
don't. But if anyone thinks
It
I know lots, I don't know a lot about sports. I just like to watch it.
But you see, this is the art, you see. So cricket. So someone says, go on Test Match Special and talk about the weather. Well, I will mainly talk about the weather. I will try not to say too much about cricket because I don't really know anything about it, but I do want to sort of know. So with a test match, is it likely to finish that day? Is it sort of nearly, is it nearly done? Or is it going on into the next day? It's good to have a little bit of information. I guess that's sort of the mantra. It's like have a little bit of information, but you don't necessarily need to have a lot of information. About everything. It's just informing your story, I guess.
I guess remembering that, yeah, you're there for the weather.
Exactly.
You've started doing some climate change stories of lots of just different conversations, the conversation becoming louder and louder and louder, and and all making it into all different aspects of media, the psyche, and then I'm sure that's accelerated by social media and a whole bunch of something that one day a social historian will look back at and explain how it all happened. But it's really interesting that you're doing stories on climate change, and I would absolutely love to just hear like your thoughts on that, why you want to do it, why is it important to you? Tell me everything about it.
Well, as a journalist, because as well as being a meteorologist, I am still a journalist, and that sort of, it sounds really corny to say it sort of runs through your blood, but when you've been trained in a certain way and you have done journalism as a job, you are sort of looking for the big story. And I think climate change is undoubtedly one of the biggest stories of our lifetime, and the lifetimes of the generations coming after us as well. That sounds like a very big thought. But I do think, there's it's such a big story, and as a journalist, you want to be a part of that story. I think the thing that has changed most of all in the time I've been doing weather, so 15 years, when I started, we didn't really talk about climate as a weather team or as weather presenters, forecasters. We would put weather in its box. That was what we talked about. Climate was in a different box, and that was for someone else, and we didn't really talk about it. And over particularly the last, I don't know, particularly the last 5 years, actually, so fairly recently, we now talk about climate so much more, which is great, because the weather, this is the thing. So weather events, we would often talk about, and then we wouldn't give climate a second glance or thought. But so much of the severe weather that we see, both in this country and around the world, can now so easily feels like the wrong word. It feels flippant, but I think it is easy now with the science that we have to attribute so much of that severe weather directly to climate change, at least in part. There will always be extreme weather. Extreme weather always has happened. Extreme weather always will happen. But we know with things like heat waves and floods that the correlation with climate change is clear. And so why shouldn't we be talking about that? In fact, we should be talking about that. And I'm very pleased that we're now in a position where we can. And I think, there are so many aspects to climate journalism. So there are sort of big policy aspects, big kind of things around mitigation and adaptation. I think what I and we more broadly as weather forecasters have to offer is that sort of impact stuff, that attribution side. And it just sits, I think, so easily and clearly within our remit. It sits in our box, and so we have to be talking about it. And I'm very fortunate that so the BBC in 2020, remember that year, decided to have a big focus on climate change. So there was a BBC News quite rightly decided to make 2020 the year of climate change, and I was lucky enough to be involved in a project called Climate Check, which was a monthly kind of roundup that we produced in weather that was going to be part of a bigger BBC News climate brand. And we started making this 3 or 4 minute thing about the climate, this little video that went out online. And unfortunately, the news agenda in 2020 kind of shifted. And so this maybe didn't gain as much traction in terms of our audiences as we were thinking it might. But what we learned from that was that actually we can tell climate stories. We can get them into our sort of weather output. We can get them into our TV forecasts, but also all the extra output we're now able to do on social media and online and on different programs around BBC News. And so I've been very fortunate to be involved in that project, and being able to talk about it is something I'm quite passionate about.
How have you found the audience response to you doing more climate change stuff? Have you noticed that they've been receptive to it? Has there been mixed reviews? Like, what has the audience response been?
I think most of our audience are also engaged, actually. I think the majority of the audience is engaged and interested and is wondering what's going on in the world around them. When we see so many weather-related stories from home and abroad, disasters, floods, terrible heat waves and droughts, I think the audience are engaged, and I think the audience largely know enough about climate change that they're sort of with us on that journey. I think most of the audience are quite happy and receptive. There is also a section of the audience, and this is a particular thing with social media, where people just seem to want to bury their heads in the sand, I think. And obviously there are other people on social media who actively believe different things and don't believe in climate change and people who are skeptical, and social media amplifies all the voices and makes them really loud. So you can be led to believe that that is the majority of the audience, but I don't think it is. And also, our role is to answer or try to answer those questions, because you don't take people with you by just saying, "No, you're wrong." No, you're wrong. I'm right. You have to help them to answer their questions. And I think we, as the BBC and other broadcasters too, ITV, but Sky, all of the broadcasters, we still have big audiences, not only on our broadcast platforms but online. We have a responsibility to try and take people with us. We're not campaigners. That's not what we're here to do. We're not telling people what to do. We're just trying to give people the information as it is scientifically. So I guess that's sort of that. I think the audience reaction has been is probably better than you might believe if you read social media too much.
Yeah, and we've probably all been on the receiving end of social media for whatever reason. However, saying all of that, that doesn't actually really matter, because when it comes to it, you're a journalist and you're working for the biggest organizations, and it's your job to, put the facts out there, and that's what they are.
Absolutely. I think one of the most interesting things that I've been involved in over the last, and you both will have been involved in as well, was the day when it was 40 degrees in the UK. Remember that day? And I was so talking about being a journalist and wanting to be in the story. Well, I was on air on the 6 and 10 o'clock news, both of those very hot days, including the second one, which was the day where we got above 40 degrees. And that was such an interesting time. Interesting, what a euphemistic word. It was a lot. So obviously there was the sort of the physical having to endure the heat like everyone else did, just in our everyday lives. But then also, obviously, when a big story like that is going on, there are huge demands from all the BBC outlets. But not only that, I was appearing on Australian breakfast TV, and I did an interview with a network in America. And you're suddenly just having this crazy busy day with loads of extra stuff going on, and then at the same time you're trying to sort of process your, I suppose, your emotional response. Again, like any story that you have to report on, you may have an emotional response. And then there's also sort of a sort of scientific response going on. And I don't know about you two, I don't think I was ever led to believe that 40 degrees was very likely in the UK. I was always taught that, 40 degrees was not something we would get here. There are lots of very good reasons climatologically why, it's very difficult. We're surrounded by ocean, which obviously keeps us cooler. When we see very high temperatures, there tends to be enough moisture around this neck of the woods to make big thunderstorms, and so to get those crazy high temperatures was something I never thought I'd see in my career. And the reason I make this point is that I think when people can see and feel something like that so viscerally on their doorsteps, in their communities, in their lives, suddenly they go, "Oh, that's not just a far away concept. So this is now something that we have to confront, because it's here in our faces." That day when it was 40 degrees, and in the office we were watching the thermometers, watching the observations, and places started to pop above 40. And then at the same time, on the other screens over there were fires in East London, and then there were transport networks going down everywhere. And you sort of suddenly, really in real time, you started to see the impact of that event, which we know, because there have been lots and lots of attribution studies. We know that that wouldn't have happened, was would have been extremely unlikely to have happened without climate change. But we sort of didn't need those attribution studies to tell us that, if you get what I mean. But I think events happening in the UK, rightly or wrongly, sort of do make our audience really sit up and go, oh, this is actually something we need to think about. And so I think that is helping us to sort of, if you like, sell the idea of us talking about climate when people can see things happening right around them.
Every forecaster will remember what happened for them when they first saw that GFS model come out with 40 degrees. Every single one of us be like, nah, there's something going on there. Nah. And then very quickly, like, oh, there's another one, another one, another one. But the interest, I've had a slightly different background to you, Ben, but I did read this sort of stuff in climate papers, but just thought it a little bit crazy. I was actually like, had like, I don't know, like kind of grieved or something when it happened. I was like, I can't believe this has happened. Like, this has happened in my lifetime. I was really sad.
I remember sitting on the train on the way to work for that late shift. I've done 4 days in a row, so the build up to this, and then the event itself, and the fourth day, that really hot day on the train, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I just thought, I mean, I was really tired, like literally tired, because all the extra broadcasts and bulletins and thought that had gone into it. And when you're living a story like that, also you wake up in the morning, you don't have to go to work till 2 o'clock, but the first thing you do is check the obs, all that. So I did sit on the train and sort of think, oh, I feel like I could have a little tear here, sort of, kind of with the accumulation of just all the work and the tiredness, but then also just there was a part of me thinking, oh, what is this all about? And that's got to be a part of the storytelling. I hope that the way we told that story as it was happening sort of reflected a little bit of that. Obviously, you don't want to go on air and cry, but we did think hard about how to reflect the magnitude of it. And I guess this is where we as professionals come in, because we get to use our judgment and our experience. Actually, this isn't just your everyday occurrence. This isn't just summer, to coin a phrase. This really is something big and powerful, and we should all be sitting up.
I think that was a day as well when it really brought some, like, it really brought to the surface, like, how quickly things are changing. Like, how, like, we've seen these extreme events, but that day for me was the day when I was like, wow, this is happening fast. It's happening faster than I thought it would. Like, I always had a feeling that we might see 40 degrees, but I thought I would be like 20 or 30 years further in my career before that happened. And when we got to 40 degrees that day, I was like, wow, this is happening so much faster than I thought it was gonna happen. I think that was another sort of thing that came out of that day as well, was just how quickly things are actually changing.
Yeah, you're so right. There's a sort of slow creep, isn't there? So I did a piece of reporting with our climate team, actually, earlier this year, about winter weather in the UK. Compared with 50 years ago, we now, on average across the UK, see 3 weeks less ground frost than we used to half a century ago. Now that sort of sounds quite shocking, but actually, year by year, as you live that change, I mean, maybe you get older and you realize things are changing, but it's not something that necessarily smacks you in the face like that day when you step out and it's suddenly like a hairdryer on your face. It can feel it. It's visceral. I think you're right, Gemma. That sort of brought home the speed of things. Things that have been happening quickly, but maybe they happen under the surface, so we don't necessarily. It's like when you see someone every day and you don't notice that they're changing, and then if you see someone for the first time in 5 years, you go, oh wow, you've changed. It's kind of that, I guess.
I think as well, I think what really, really resonated with me, so I worked through a period of that as well. It doesn't matter really who anybody was watching. The one thing everybody wanted was just like this health message. It wasn't a weather forecast. It was all of us saying the same thing. You cannot cool down in this. The overnight temp, you cannot cool down. You will dehydrate. Anyone who was vulnerable, and that goes for like little babies all the way through to, elderly people or people who are maybe undergoing treatment. I mean, it was, I just found it really sad. I really did. It's like, how do you deliver this forecast? It was like, wow, it's just a health message now. It actually doesn't matter anymore. This, I just have to keep repeating this for people who might watch me. I hope they hear what I'm saying.
Definitely. And one of the things I kind of have come to think about that is here it was hot for 2 days, really, like really hot for 2 days. What happens if that goes on for a week? Because I think my sense is it happened for 2 days, it made headlines, people sat up and listened, but then actually, in terms of that event, people have sort of moved on from there. If it happened for a week, it would be a completely different set of impacts. I'm not saying it will, but we were quite lucky in terms of how short-lived that blast of heat was. So I guess that's my concern, is what happens next, and is this a vision of the future? I was talking to some Spanish broadcast meteorologists, and they kind of said that, for them, climate change is such a is a feature of their everyday weather forecasts, because every single year they are feeling the effects of climate change in a way that is obvious. They have droughts, wildfires, record temperatures. This happens every single year. And so their audiences have quite a different grasp of it compared with ours, because it goes back to that point I was making before. They can feel it. They can see the difference. They can see that things have changed dramatically and quickly. And so they are in a sort of different place to where we are. And obviously, I hope that we don't end up in a similar place. But if things go on the way that they are at the moment, we may end up in a situation where people actually are forced to sit up and listen every day.
Ben, thank you so much for discussing all of that with us. I know that I think all three of us could probably continue on this conversation for the rest of the night over a few glasses of wine,
Yes, please.
and we'd still have plenty more to talk about. But we're just going to move on a little bit to get to know me round and maybe just learn a little bit something about you that maybe people who do see you on the telly don't know about you.
I always start is by saying there's a few weather related ones, and then some of them are random. But actually, the other day I realized there's actually only two weather related ones, and the other ones are literally just random. So we'll get the weather related ones out the way first. What is your favorite season?
Think
Oh,
carefully.
I know this is quick fire, and I'm meant to just tell you one. I like them all, because I like that things change. I like that things don't stay the same. I think, actually, do you know what? I like the autumn, because I like summer is great, but by the end of it, I've had enough. I'm quite a hot person. I feel the warmth. And so I kind of get to a point where I'm like, I'm done with summer, and I like the night's drawing in. I like it gets a little bit darker. I mean, it's mulled wine season coming up. I love all of that. Autumn, I think, is my favorite, but I like them all.
Ben, we've just fallen out. Spring is the best season.
We're the opposite. We're the opposite. But you see, I get bored of winter too. I also, and then I want spring to come. So it's maybe it's just, maybe if we were doing this in, we're recording this in September. If we were doing this in March, I might say spring like you. So.
Greedy, Ben, greedy.
Yeah, fickle, fickle and greedy. Exactly.
I do like the fact that we live in a country, though, that has seasons, and so it does make the weather forecasting so varied. We get to experience so many different types of weather, sometimes a lot of the seasons in one day. So I do think it does allow us to have a really varied job. So yeah,
Agreed. Agreed.
I love the fact that we forecast here and we get to forecast so many different types. So yeah. What is your favorite cloud?
Oh, easy. Cumulonimbus. I know that's such a basic answer.
It's amazing. It
What everyone's
literally
going to say.
visually shows you the top of our troposphere, and
I know. And
who wouldn't love it?
you can see all the movements inside. You can literally see what's going on in that cloud. I love them. Now, it's I'm have a I have a strange relationship with thunderstorms. I get very excited by them when they're in the forecast and when they are coming, but when they are here, I am scared. I've
There's a
always been
word for
scared of
that.
thunderstorms.
What is it? I'm going to Google it here.
Oh, yeah, look up the word.
Fear of thunderstorms. I've mentioned it a few times because it is a real thing. Oh, yeah, astrophobia.
Astrophobia. Well, I so there's a sort of there was a joke when I was training as a forecaster, because I was doing my training at the Air Force base in the summer, and it was a very convective summer. It was a very showery summer, and the joke was that that was the only kind of weather I ever really learned to forecast, is showers and thunderstorms. So I love them. I think they're great, but when there's one over my head, I am going to run away, possibly literally screaming.
That's a great
And
anecdote.
there we are, you know?
Okay, now we're going to the random ones.
Okay.
If you could have a superpower, what would it be?
I mean, it would be. It would. Is it a cop out to say I'd like to be able to change the weather? No, that's boring, isn't it? That's boring. I don't
Not
know.
boring to me. I'd make sure my weather forecast was right all the time. Maybe
That's
as good as your
true.
last one.
It would be a very practical superpower.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I sometimes I wonder if the superpower I would like would be to be able to like persuade people to think the same as me all the time, because it would make life a lot easier.
I like that too.
Yeah. Or to conjure up like ice cream or
A
other
great
sweet food stuffs at will.
got a
Fancy.
sweet tooth, Ben, that I do remember about you.
Such a sweet tooth. It's a nightmare. Yeah, maybe that. So there are. I'd like three superpowers. Again, I am greedy.
They're all great superpowers, though. Would you prefer to go to the beach or the mountains?
Probably, can I say the bar next to the beach?
Yeah, you can.
So I like to go to the coast because I like the sea. I like to see the sea. It makes me happy to see the sea. I actually quite like swimming in the sea, but I don't really like the beach because the sand annoys me. But I like the coast. So I think I will say the beach, overall. But if there's a nice little bar where I can have a little cocktail or something, that would be ideal. Thanks.
100% is my most favorite answer I've ever heard of that question. That's fantastic. What would be your cocktail of choice at the beach?
Oh my word, where do I begin? Well, if I'm very thirsty because it's been a hot day and I've not had very much to drink, I would like an Aperol spritz, please, because that is refreshing and a little bit fruity, but not too fruity. And then if it's a little bit later in the evening, I would like you to bring me a Negroni, please. So it's like the same color as an Aperol spritz, but short, sharp.
What's
Lovely
Negroni? I
impression.
don't know what spirits in that.
So it's gin,
I'm in.
vermouth.
Okay, I'm in. I'm in.
Well, there you go. I'd say no more. Gin, vermouth, Campari, or do you know what? Also, like a gin martini. Actually, can't beat
Oh,
that. So
what's it
again,
called again? I'm gonna have to try this.
oh, a Negroni.
Negroni. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm literally gonna write it
you
down
never
on
had
my
one.
notes right now.
Well,
Nope. Next time we meet, let's go
I'm
get a
buying you a
Negroni.
Negroni next time I see you. That is
Brilliant.
a deal.
Okay, this is one of our more random ones. If you
Okay.
were a fruit or vegetable, what would you be?
Goodness me. Oh, well, maybe a pineapple. They can be a little bit prickly on the outside, but basically they're just delicious. I think I'll be a pineapple.
That's a great
Okay.
answer. I always love how people are like, oh, fruit or vegetable, I don't know. And then, like, literally 10 seconds later, oh, yes, I'm a something or other.
Okay, we've got two more questions. So, if you could invite one person to dinner, it can be anybody at all from any historical time frame, a fictional character, who would you invite?
Maybe Sir Francis Drake, because Sir Francis Drake was born in the same town that I come from, in Devon. He was born at a place that is now very near a recycling centre. So when you go down to the tip, you can go past Sir Francis Drake's house. Also, like he was playing bowls on Plymouth Hoe apparently before he went to defeat the Spanish Armada. And I've been past that bowling ground, so I've got a lot I'd like to ask him about all of those stories. Yeah, maybe Sir Francis Drake or Deborah Meaden, because I just think she's great. I love her no nonsense approach on Dragon's Den. So maybe Sir Francis Drake on that side of the table, and Deborah Meaden over there.
She'd have a good green business solution for
She
everybody.
would.
Me and Gemma really like her.
That is very true. She would. She does a very good podcast, actually, on BBC Five Live. And yes, I hadn't even thought of that. So it's topical. Even if I don't try to make it topical, it's topical.
Got to meet her, didn't we
Yeah, we
now?
got to meet her and
Thank
ask her a
you.
quick question. Ash was braver than I was. I was like, I can't go over there. And Ash was like, oh, I'll go over there.
I'd
She
love
was,
to meet her.
I was genuinely nervous meeting her, but I really admire her. Like, I really, really admire her.
Yeah, I get. I think I agree with you.
And I love how she like completely just changed her ethos to be like, I'm only investing in green business, and just stuck to it. And like, it's really is trailblazing. I really like her.
Yeah, she's definitely not doing it to sort of ride a trend, is she? She's
Nope. Doing to make a change.
made a choice and made a change. Yeah.
It's great listening to her speak on these subjects as well. She's brilliant.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And
Absolutely.
you need a different point of view on it as well, don't you? Like, you can't just come a climate from weather. You need to be hearing it from, like, I mean, basically most of this podcast, we just Gemma also just finds these magical guests as well. And like all the different experts that we've had on are all coming at climate from a totally different angle. And
Absolutely.
you need to go at it. And she comes at it from business.
Yeah, definitely.
And our final question is, what is one thing that you wish everybody knew about the weather?
This is easy. I wish everybody knew what showers really mean. And so when we tell people that there are going to be showers, I would like them to know that that might mean they get drenched, because I think a lot of people, certainly a lot of people I've spoken to, think that a shower is just a little sort of piddly light rain moment. Whereas when obviously we know that a shower can deliver the heaviest rain of all. So I think if everybody knew what a shower was, our lives would be a lot easier.
I've also always wondered, is there another word for scattered showers? And I
Oh,
just
well.
cannot think of one.
You see, that's an interesting one, because
For
if you're,
years, I've asked people about this. What's the other word?
well, if you're spending your day in a place, you don't care that the showers are scattered across the weather map, do you? Like, you care, will one come across my head? How many of them will there be? So maybe is scattered showers a useful term for us to be using? I don't know.
And that's also like really people are perhaps thinking, well, that was just raining.
Absolutely. Well, that's right. They go, that wasn't a shower. That was just rain. And
And
so, yeah, exactly. Maybe we need to just retire the term completely. Heavy downpours. I don't know, something like that. Anyway, yes. So
Gaps in between the showers.
gaps in between the showers. See, this is so it's when we start having these conversations, I love all this. Oh, which word would you use to say that? What sort of subtlety are we trying to get at when we say heavy downpours or torrential downpours? Or, I love all of that. It's kind of it's one of the best bits of our jobs, I think.
I totally agree. And the other thing with showers, going back to the showers, is to say to people it's like a short period of time. Like
Yes.
you'll get rain, but then the sun will come out. And then
Exactly.
it might rain again, but then the sun will come out.
Exactly. But then on top of that, some people won't get a shower and other people will get one after another, after another, after another.
Or there'll be like just an isolated shower, and that one could be a big old beefy
Yeah.
guy, and then nobody else gets one. I mean, I just there's so much to it, but again, that comes back, doesn't it, to like presenting the weather and then
Absolutely. And that takes
understanding
right
the
back.
data you're looking at, like what we're
Absolutely.
looking at.
Right back to where we started, which is lovely.
Yeah,
It's
lovely full
true.
circle. Yeah, and we're gonna have to stop, because if not, we will just keep on talking,
Yeah,
which
I
is
know.
not
I know.
good for anyone. So, Ben, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure to spend this time with you. Thank you for giving us your evening.
I have loved it. Thank you very much. So good to see you both. And hopefully we can talk again soon.
If you have enjoyed this episode, we would love it if you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. It really does mean a lot. It allows us to reach more people and share the podcast as well with lots of people. If you would like to follow Ben on social media, what's your Instagram and everything, Ben?
So on Instagram, I am at BenRichWeather, and on X, I am at Ben_Rich.
Brilliant. And if you want to follow us on Instagram, we are For the Love of Weather. On X, we are the number four Love of Weather. And as always, we just hope that you leave this episode loving the weather just that little bit more.
Thanks for listening. Bye.